there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to my travel podcast, Life's a Beach. Every week I invite a special guest to take us on a journey together to their favourite holiday destinations and to reveal their top travel tips and tales. Now our passenger this week is Brit Pop Royalty. His bands include Blur, Gorillaz, The Good, The Bad, The Queen. He is basically our Essex Mozart. This man is a genius. His wonderful new album, The Nearer the Fountain, More Pure the Stream Flows, is out now and it is absolutely beautiful. It's so atmospheric. You're going to love it. And he's starting a tour very soon and he's going everywhere. So check out his tour dates. It is, of course, Damon Albarn. Final boarding call for Damon Albarn. Damon Albarn, this is your final boarding call for Damon Albarn. Damon Albarn.
Damon Albarn. Damon! Come to the gate.
Thank you. How are you, love?
I'm very well. I'm actually your neighbour.
Your neighbour? What?
I'm your neighbour.
What do you mean?
Well, I only live two roads behind you.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What do you think about all these basements they're building? Do my head in. It's not you, is it, that's drilling?
I did have a basement 10 years ago, you know, when there was the flooding.
Oh, God, yeah.
I succumbed to the great flood. No. Of
did you get
of
all
West
the people
London.
Complaining? They like to complain round here, don't they?
Well, I suppose it's inevitable when this whole area is built over a river, the Westbourne.
Oh, yeah.
It's inevitable.
I know.
In fact, the writing was literally on the wall when they were digging this vast abyss out under my... It's extraordinary what happens when they do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just doing it really just to keep... Everybody else was doing that, and I thought, well, if I don't do it, then the value of the house, the whole point of everything is about that, isn't it, really? It seems to be.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I don't do it, then I'll be left behind. and really don't need the space and don't use it. It's a complete curate's egg, to be honest with you. But when they were digging out, I mean, they literally dig your house out and they put it on stilts. I mean, that's how they do it. And but you could see there was just at the bottom of this excavation, there was this brickwork that kind of was a tunnel, which was where the Westbourne flowed. In fact, it flows. So, I mean, why did I do it? What an idiot.
I know. You know what I mean? That's not the best idea you've had, is it?
No, well, or anybody else.
Because actually people don't know that the Serpentine's actually the Westbourne as well,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Well, that's where it comes out.
Yeah, because there's seven. I love, I've got that book over there about the history of London. I love London. And you know that bit up there, you know that circular bit in Notting Hill? That's on the of the race course where it was up there.
Yeah, and Westbourne Grove was... Do you know the history of Westbourne Grove? Westbourne Grove was like one of the first kind of sort of bougie shopping streets in Victorian England. In fact, it's earlier than that. It's late Georgian London. They built, it's like in the middle of the countryside then, and they built these like really expensive shops.
Yeah.
How times don't change.
And then Whiteley's.
Really expensive shops that no one goes into.
I know. They're always bloody empty, aren't they?
Well, they're just rubbish, most of them. They used to be... When I moved to West London, it was a very, very different place, I have to be honest with you. And where I live used to be just old antique shops and bric-a-brac shops and old dodgy pubs.
Yeah.
All gone.
I know. It's a shame, isn't it?
It's a real shame. Yeah. It's a real shame.
There's little bits of Portobello Road that's still clinging on,
and
but
Goldbourne Road is still lovely.
But
I heard that they're my favourite, because my studio's down the road from Goldbourne, and regularly I go to the Moroccan soup stand to get soup.
Yeah.
And Kensington and Chelsea are kind of trying to move them on.
Oh, God.
I mean, they never learn, do they?
No. Brixton's having it at the minute, aren't they, with that Electric Avenue? For fuck's sake. Do we need another Pret? Do we really need another Pret?
In fact we need a lot less Pret.
Yeah.
We need a lot less of all of that, because all of that food is packaged in plastic and a simple soup stand. They buy their lentils, they cook it, they distribute it. There's no carbon footprint or anything. No. It's just pure.
And I bet there's a bloody queue as well, which is great, because in Pret, people don't queue. They just hover around the fucking sandwiches. Pick a sandwich, love. Why are you staring at it?
And also, there's a very, very big Muslim community in that area, and it's a part of Fridays when they go to mosque. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all stand and socialise and catch up and have soup.
Yeah.
Why would you take that away?
I know, love. You're talking to me like you think I'm mayor. You know I'm not mayor.
No.
I've got no influence. You know that.
No, but it does. This country really is frustrating, to say the least, on occasions, as some of the decisions, the inexplicable decisions that seem to be made on a weekly basis at the moment are...
I can't do anything, love. I feel like someone told you this podcast is about social issues. Because I think someone did, it's about travel. I can't really do anything.
No, okay.
Right, listen, I get what you're saying. I feel the same, love. I feel the same.
Yeah, I know you do. That's why. You know.
Yeah. I'd just like to remind our travellers that this is a travel podcast. That's right, it's a travel podcast, not a political podcast. Please enjoy the rest of the banter. Thank you. So we've got to talk about the nearer the fountain, more pure the stream. Now, listen, I'm so pleased you called it this, because you know John Clare is a Northampton.
Yes.
The Northampton's peasant poet. And
exactly.
Northampton. It's nice to
meet someone. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
He would have been... invented Greenpeace, because he was proper like about all the roaming, the trespassing everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was a very modern man, really, for the early 19th century, you know, in many ways. Mental health issues, his sexuality.
Yeah.
He was really, you know, I mean, if you put him now, he'd seem like, oh, this guy's really modern.
Yeah. So tell us then, so this album was inspired by Iceland. So you went there and you got out...
To get back on track.
Well, no, I'm just listening. No, because I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I've got to... So listen, so tell me Iceland. Why Iceland? I've always wanted to go to Iceland, but I've never been. It's on my wish list. I've done loads of travelling, but it's there, but I've never actually gone there. Why Iceland?
Oh, well, if you'd like to come to Iceland, I'd invite you to stay at my house.
You're joking me. No. Don't say this, because I will turn up.
No, really. Really. It's a simple place, but it's a very nice location.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're in lockdown, you were there, but...
No, I wasn't in there for lockdown. I mean, okay, so let's go back to why I started this record. Well, why I went to Iceland in the first place. Well, as a kid, I used to have this recurring dream of, like, flying over black sand. I had no geography. It would just appear. I'd just suddenly, in the middle of whatever was else happening in the dream, I suddenly levitate and start flying over black sand. And I never really couldn't connect it to anything. And then I was sitting somewhere in America in probably a Holiday Inn on tour in the early 90s. And I saw a National Geographic program about Iceland. And suddenly there were these amazing kind of aerial photos of vast expanses of black sand.
Yeah.
And immediately I was like, ah, this is the place of my dreams. Yeah. I must travel here.
Because there are volcanoes and everything there.
Well, it's the youngest kind of landmass on planet Earth still. I mean, there's a volcano going on at the moment that's only like 40 minutes drive outside of Reykjavik. Mm. I was there last week and I didn't get a chance to do it because I was so busy. But yeah, I mean, it's just literally just get in a car and 40 minutes later, there's a fissure in the Earth's crust and huge amounts of molten lava spewing out of it.
And that inspired your music. That is pressure, though, isn't it? Isn't that pressure?
Well,
what do people of Iceland, you're doing an album, a whole album on it. You must feel some pressure for the Icelandic people. I mean, you know, it's got to be good, isn't it? Because this is their place.
Well, you're right. And they've also, they very kindly gave me Icelandic citizenship recently. So there's extra pressure. Extra pressure. So I went there in 1996, and I was very grateful of the opportunity to just go somewhere. I mean, at the time I thought, if I go to Iceland, no one will know who I am. You know, I can escape Britpop and all the madness of fame and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I naively booked myself into a Saga hotel, thinking I was kind of going to turn up in some Viking longhouse, and got there and realised, you know, it was a cruise ship stop off
for old people.
For old people, yeah.
Well, so who stopped that for you? Did you book it yourself? You see,
well, now I'm obviously that's where I would go, but at the time I was in my mid 20s, and it was like
Didn't you get the in with looking at the old people in the brochure? I mean, the
no,
clues are there.
I know. I just saw Saga and
you
thought.
See Tenor Lady
I thought
adverts,
Icelandic.
You know, it's for
no.
An
I thought
elden.
Icelandic sagas, the old stories.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
Nordic
about
story.
The saga, but yeah,
exactly. So I was going that way with it. So. Anyway, it was perfect for the first few days. I went there with my typewriter and my guitar, and obviously I was just left to my own whatever I was going to do, which was sort of wander around wide-eyed and try and write about it. And then I realised that actually Britpop had travelled over there, and by about the fourth or fifth day there was 30 or 40 kids outside the hotel, which was weird for all the other people in there, because that's not what they...
All these old people going to these youngsters.
Exactly.
They're going to mug us. Yeah. They're going to mug us.
Yeah. Are you looking for a shag in Benidorm? Well, you'll get it there. You know, there's girls who want boys, who like boys to be girls, who do boys like their girls, who do girls like their boys. There always should be someone you really love. Anyway, I can't be talking here all day. I've got to go.
So, I slowly got to know people over there. In fact, I knew one person before I went there, who was Einar Orn, who is the other singer in the Sugar Cubes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd had a crazy night in Boston where Blur and the Sugar Cubes were playing on the same strip, and we'd gone out drinking afterwards. So I knew I had one number in my phone book. So I called him up, and he came to meet me, but he'd just gone sober. He'd given up all his previous habits. So there was me really looking for a party, and this guy who was like really in the depths of rehab. But we got on really, really well, and we've become really close friends. Anyway, so I started kind of having an amazing time in Iceland. I mean, one really ridiculous story, just to sort of give you a kind of idea of what it was like around that time, is they have this satirical program on New Year's Eve, just before midnight, where actors kind of recreate the big events of the year. And I was on it in 1996. Just I'd only been there 6 months, and the sketch was a priest and all these young women with babies in wrapped up, and he was going there, and he was going, and what do you call your child, Damon? What do you call your child, Damon? I know it was not accurate, no, but funny nonetheless,
yeah.
And not kind of when I think about why I went there, and for it so quickly to escalate to something that ridiculous.
You know,
trying to get away.
Yeah, I know. And then you go suddenly straight into it.
Even
yeah.
worse, in fact. But it actually turned out that the Icelanders are very, very relaxed and not really into all of that.
No.
And never really had any problems. And then I sort of just kind of started to feel really at home there, and then built a house in 1999.
You built the house?
Personally, no.
Well, no, yeah. It's like I've rescued dogs from, like, the Korean meat trade, and people think I genuinely rescued them, like I'm dropped in a rope ladder to Seoul, and, you know, just give her the dog,
put it
in the bag.
I might have actually eaten dog in Korea.
Really? Oh, well, oh, dear.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've also accidentally eaten monkey
in
Nigeria.
Was
so.
It dead?
Well, no, I was given this pepper soup, and this little hand kind of floated to the top.
Oh, no, no,
honestly.
No. Oh, my God, why would you eat a monkey?
I didn't mean to.
No, I know, I'm not having a go at you. Why would you kill
I didn't
kill
mean
a...
to eat, I didn't...
No.
Mr Orban, I'm afraid Alan Eyre is not gorilla friendly. Thank you. Can you please put them back in the jungle?
But I've eaten some weird stuff. I think the weirdest thing I was served up was in the middle of China. I sat down at this restaurant, and it was a frog speciality restaurant. You know, and they have, like, only frog is served.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I was told, you've got to try this. It's amazing. Yeah. So, okay, I'll try this. Yeah. How the meal started was a waiter came out with a plastic bowl of live frogs. And said, "Choose your frog."
Oh,
I was like, "Do I really? Do I really have to?" It's about looking. I didn't want to make eye contact
that.
With the frog. I put my finger into the bowl, and he took out this frog and immediately threw it on the pavement, knocked it out.
No! Fuck! Yeah. You see, I can't. You feel like you're playing God when you're picking. But you know what?
But when you're travelling...
And you travel, you're like the Judith Chalmers of music. You
did,
are everywhere.
Not so much recently, but no. I have done a lot of travelling. I've always felt like, you know, to get the most out of it, you've just got to be really relaxed and just go with where the hospitality takes you, you know, and be open.
Yeah.
And don't judge other people, where other people's cultures, and trying to embrace them while you're there, because why wouldn't you? You know, you're
of
not,
course, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm reading that David Sedaris book about in China, you know, and he really throws himself into it. But he says, China, they don't hide it. He said he goes to a cat meatball restaurant.
Yes, it's
and he says,
very
you
much
know,
so.
You, he says, but that's, they're not disguising it. You go there to eat cat meatballs. And he says, and then his partner, it's a really funny book. I mean, his partner says, oh, I can't eat a seahorse, because he says, oh, you know, they look
seal.
So cute. Yeah.
I've eaten a seal.
Seahorse.
Oh, no.
Because he says, oh, they look
fried
so
seahorse?
Oh, I don't know. I've never had it. It's only in the...
No.
You've eaten a seal?
I've eaten a... Yeah.
How the fuck? How does that happen?
In Iceland, actually.
Oh, I bet they love it over there.
In Iceland, yeah, they love it. They love it. They also have this very ancient festival in the middle of January, which is a traditional Viking feast. But basically, it sort of comprises of literally what's left in the middle of the winter, which means you get ram's heads that have been cured and then roasted, and you literally have to peel the little bits of skin off the skull and eat it. And you get fermented shark, which is prepared by, they catch the shark, put it in the ground, piss on it, and leave it for 6 months.
Okay.
And then it's perfect.
Of course, why wouldn't you?
Very good for the digestion, but yeah, definitely you need something like Brennevin, which is their kind of fire water.
So Vikings, did they piss on sharks before they eat them?
That's how you can't eat them unless they've fermented.
Oh, okay.
Or gone off.
Yeah,
fermented,
yeah.
Gone off, which it's actually really nice. I like it.
You can't taste the piss though.
You can taste the ammonia.
I mean,
but that's why it's good for the stomach, because it's really cleansing.
Oh, I see. Because they say you should drink your own wee,
exactly,
don't you?
Exactly. It's a sort of socially acceptable way of drinking your own piss.
Well,
or somebody else's piss.
Yeah. You know, you invited me over to stay at yours. I think I'm busy.
Shark life.
Because, you know, with the drinking in Iceland, my friend went there and said, because you have that 24-hour sun on a Saturday and a Friday night, he says, you know, you're seeing people pissing behind a skip and then getting off in broad daylight.
Yes.
It's like the thriller video. They said, you know, it's proper, like, zombie apocalypse. Did you ever come across any of that?
Well, I was probably part of it. No, Iceland's the only place where you'd be kind of sort of walking around drunk at 4 a.m. and a car would turn up and they'd just go, come with us, and you would.
Oh,
because
yeah,
it feels, it's that relaxed and that everything's so local and everyone knows everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's really, it's a beautiful culture, actually.
After anything that I know of, is it classed as Scandinavia? But I did a gig up in Tromso.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just amazing.
Yeah.
And they're so friendly and they're just... And I really, you know, and I went to see the Northern Lights and all that, but they don't, some of them I found didn't really give a shit. And I said to this waiter, I said, I saw the Northern Lights last night. She said, oh, they are lights, get over it. And I thought, well, I think they're not as impressed
as
I am.
Well, there's a whole industry in Iceland where you sign up to go and you fly up there and find the Northern Lights. But it's a bit of a scam because no one can predict when they're going to come.
Mm.
But they're sort of, you have people with walkie-talkies in big snow jeeps driving around. Sort of, someone will just say, hey, they're over here. And then everyone will drive over there.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. So there's a whole industry. But that's a kind of, that is a Icelandic thing, because when people used to believe in unicorns, a unicorn horn would go for like millions of pounds, and every rich royal family in Europe had to have a unicorn horn because their magical properties and the prestige of it.
Yeah.
Now there was two families in Iceland who were inexplicably rich, because during medieval Iceland was not exactly a wealthy place. It was like really, really poor. But there were these two families, and no one knew why they were so wealthy. Well, they were so wealthy because they were the only ones who knew how to catch the narwhals up in Greenland, and they'd sell them as unicorn horns.
Oh, of course, yeah, I see.
So they've got form of kind of selling dreams that
king of the pyramid schemes and all that.
Exactly.
Hiya everyone, if you look out on your left you'll see the Northern Lights, if you look out on the right you'll see the Southern Shites. Hey, it's only a joke.
Can we talk about Marley? Obviously,
yes.
Marley Music 2002. Did you go to Timbuktu? Because it's one of those places that I want. Did you go there?
Yeah,
is it as amazing as it
incredible.
Looks?
It's incredible. Timbuktu, because it's a city that is... completely made out, it's the adobe mud kind of architecture.
Yeah.
And they have this amazing mosque in the middle, which everybody in the community once every 4 years rebuilds, which I think is a lovely idea. Necessary, but just that, the communal kind of joy in renovating your city all together, all the time. But the mad thing is because the desert is encroaching so dramatically on Timbuktu, you kind of sort of go into a house and it all seems kind of like normal, and then you try and go out the back and it's the desert's literally...
Yeah, yeah.
You can't even get out the back door because the desert is so... So it unfortunately, it will disappear at some point.
Yeah,
it,
yeah. And I know global warming as well.
Yeah, yeah. It will become desert once more.
And
so.
I heard that Gaddafi, didn't he, like, dig the river so he could go to his luxury hotel and then the people haven't got any water?
Yeah, Gaddafi spent... Gaddafi's still very popular in Mali because he... You know, he actually built things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. I always wanted to know whether it was true or not, but he'd always travel and stay in a Bedouin tent. And I was told that it was because he had very bad wind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
I don't know if you have to do that.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
I can't imagine Gaddafi with IBS.
Yes, well, apparently so.
You've got all the gossip, you, haven't you?
Yeah.
Let's talk about early holidays. Where did you go? Where did you go? And like, you know, obviously we're girls and boys, obviously. Did you ever have one of those?
Did I ever go to Greece?
Get nasty
or Magaluf?
Did you do all that Shagaluf?
It was inspired by Magaluf.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I wasn't actually staying in Magaluf, but I kind of sort of...
You dip your toe in Magaluf.
I dip my
toe.
It wasn't really for me. But as a kid, the first time I ever went abroad would have been about 1975. And I remember it vividly. We went on a package holiday to Alicante or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
But we went in a pink TriStar. Like, never forget, a pink plane.
Wow.
Like, only pink. It was amazing. I remember
even
that.
I'm going, that's too gay.
Honestly...
Why don't we fly in pink airplanes anymore?
Well, that was the 1970s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People didn't even think they did they?
No. So I remember that pink aeroplane. And then I remember a few unsuccessful camping holidays.
Yeah.
One where it rained all holiday. And my mum, we were staying in some farmer's field, and my mum went to get some milk in the morning and got bitten by the dog and had to go to hospital.
Sorry, that took a turn then. Sorry, yeah, that's not funny.
No. No, it's just a miserable holiday was just made compounded by A&E in some small Welsh town. But then the most memorable holidays were the ones where my dad would drive non-stop from London and then from Colchester all the way down to Italy or southern France.
But
my dad's such a stickler. We were staying with friends, actually, in both places. I'll talk about France first and I'll talk about Italy. But France, we were staying with some friends of his parents. Now, my dad's mum and dad were the biggest Francophiles this country has ever produced. They were both teachers, and literally every single holiday they get in their Skoda. My granddad, my granddad
right
would light his pipe, and they claimed to have visited every single town in France. So by the time I was kind of sort of going on holiday with my parents, they had friends all around France. So we would go and stay with these people. But my dad didn't want to arrive early, even though we'd driven for 2 days. It was right on the Swiss-French border, a town called Dole. And he stopped at the end of the road and we had to wait for an hour. Because we said we'd arrive at 4 and we'd arrived at 3.
Oh, no.
Yes. It's true.
Oh, God.
I know. Moving swiftly on to Italy, similar kind of lengths of driving. But Italy was really brilliant because I used to stay in a small town called Castiglione del Largo, which is next to Lake Trasimeno in Tuscany and on the Umbrian-Tuscan border. And yeah, I was there as a teenager, so I got to ride drive a Vespa like years earlier than you would have here.
Like talented Mr. Ripley and all that.
Exactly. Not quite the same as that, but you know.
What about Holiday Romance? Did you get lucky?
Yeah, that was the first time I kissed a girl was on the beach of the lake in Tuscany. But
how romantic was that?
Well, but back in those days, Italian girls had to have a chaperone still.
Oh really?
Yeah. So her brother came and we went onto the beach. And I don't know what happened, but then the police turned up on the beach with headlights because she was illegal. You weren't allowed to. So it was all. It didn't end well.
No.
But I remember. But it was just such an exotic place at that time for a boy from Essex to be.
Yeah, I love it.
Discovering
you
himself.
You can't go wrong in it.
No, you can't.
Fit people, fit food, fit wine.
Exactly. It's just wonderful.
Everything's fit about it.
Yeah, it is.
So you're going on tour with this album, are you? You did the Globe. I mean, that must have been amazing.
It was wonderful, actually. Yeah. I didn't realise how perfect the Globe is. I don't think they realised either what a perfect place it is to play music. It's like a sort of wooden-framed Elizabethan Albert Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
It's brilliant. It's really, really brilliant. I recommend everyone play there if they get the opportunity.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go on tour. Yeah, I'm busy next year. I've got like sort of 2.5 years worth of different projects I've all got to play in 1 year. So, yeah, I think most people are going to be busy next year.
Do you believe in that? They're sort of saying this is going to be our roaring 20s. After the lockdown, there's going to be just this creative splurge. Because I'm on a stand-up tour at the minute and I am people pay ticket and they want it, but I feel the love
and
the joy.
No, of course, on this journey with you. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're very lucky in a way to be allowed to,
you
know, be in that position to have that interaction with people. We're really lucky. I mean, it's an album that definitely deserves to be listened to as a piece of music. I think it probably up there with some of the best stuff I've done. I mean, and that's got a lot to do with the circumstance and the times in which it's made.
Yeah. The layering of it all. I mean, I'm not music demanded, but the layering and the building, Polaris and everything. Saxophone comes in.
Yeah, I mean, that was a decision I made because I had all these workshop rehearsal tapes from Iceland where I literally was just looking out the window with this fabulous group of orchestral musicians just playing the landscape and I call it a big mountain called Esja, literally slap bang in front of the house, and there's a sort of a small golf course at the bottom of my, not garden, because that makes it sound very suburban, and it's not at all. And then there's a black beach, and then there's a little island where eider duck live, and you can actually get to when the tide's out. And
for a minute I thought that was an old lady, sorry.
But there's
eider duck.
Two things that came with buying this little plot of land was the right to a certain weight of eider down each year. Yeah. And but also to build in this area, we had to employ a fairy lawyer. No, it does.
You can't say language like that anymore, David.
No, seriously, you have to. We call them fairies. They call them the hidden folk, hidden people. You have to employ. It's a shamanic practice. Law practice. It's not a kind of, I don't know if it's stand up in a court of law and whether who would be representing the fairies, but it's to be taken seriously by everyone takes it very seriously. The existence of a hidden other reality.
Yeah.
And yeah, the fairies were identified as having lived in this area for a long time, and so it was recommended that you entered this conversation with them, so that your building would go according to plan, and there wouldn't be any kind of sort of inexplicable
dry rot.
Exactly, yeah. Those kind of things. I haven't had too much touch would go wrong with the house, except that one of the local cats uses the area outside my bedroom as a litter. That's the only thing. But I do give them an offering every time I go there, and there's a whole kind of protocol to communicating with fairies.
That's amazing. Iceland seem to have got it right. You know, they do, don't
well,
they?
Well, no, but everyone's really comfortable with this. Yeah. And you know, I can say it with a straight face because I do believe in it, in the sense that I think it's wonderful that they still retain that sort of sense of magic in their society. Yeah. Just on a daily basis, they engage with, you know.
In a way, it's nice things. To have another world to go to. Exactly. When you are pissed off with this world and you're moaning and complaining.
Go and talk to the fairies.
Yeah.
Sorry, madam, we do not serve chicken tikka lasagna or prawn rings. No, we're not flying to that kind of Iceland. Thank you.
I love that. I'm going to stay at your house.
I would love you to.
I want to chat to these fairies and I want some
pissed I think you get on very well with them.
Well, we speak the same language. Can I just say the photography is just stunning.
Thank you.
And isn't it a shame that people don't really know all this Spotify? People don't really appreciate the artwork anymore. You don't get any... It's gorgeous, the photography.
I mean, I'm just old school in that sense. I don't think I've finished something until I've got the vinyl in my hand, you know. But, you know, I'm aware that I'm, you know, of a different generation, maybe.
Well, listen, this is the quick fire round.
It's not that sad.
No, I'm actually quite choked. No, it is. I mean, you know, I remember just looking at it now and on Spotify and all that. I don't see any of the album covers.
Well, as I said to you earlier, I don't have Spotify. I don't have Twitter. I don't have Instagram. I don't have Facebook. I don't have anything.
Yeah.
The only thing that I have, which started years ago with my daughter, is Snapchat, and that's. It's bizarre. That's the only thing I've only got 3 people who I communicate with. That's my nephew, my daughter, and Einar in Iceland, bizarrely.
Oh.
Yeah, the only 3 people. I haven't got any. So yeah, it's a very limited platform.
Yeah.
This is your captain speaking. We are on our final approach to our destination. Cabin crew, get ready for landing. Cabin crew, get ready for landing.
Now, we're about to land, and I've just got to do this quick fire round. These are ridiculous, so do not put any pressure on yourself, okay, love?
Yeah, okay.
Mojito or mint tea?
Well, I love mint tea. I love mint tea. I love mojito as well. But I think sort of. Well, it depends. You see, too vague.
Sorry, love. This is it's very flawed.
Mint tea. If I'm like in. In Mexico.
Or about Cuba mojito? Have you ever had a mojito in Cuba?
Yes, I have.
Best ones in the world.
Yes, I have. Okay, in Cuba, a mojito. In Morocco and anywhere in the Sahel, mint tea.
Okay, wicked. Iceland the place or Iceland the supermarket? I'm being mischievous.
Well, I'm...
You're giving me evils now. Let's move
no,
on.
No, well, you know what the answer is.
First aid kit or first aid
ship? I have to say, it does kind of give the game away, really, wasn't it, when they're worrying about pigs in blankets in August, about the sort of what actually goes into these things that they sell at Iceland.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I know it's really convenient, but I just think we should put more emphasis on kids learning how to cook. And I think society would just be a lot happier. But that's a big one. I'm sorry, I'm going.
Well, no, no, no. Listen, but I think you haven't tried Iceland's chicken tikka lasagna.
No, you're absolutely right. Maybe I should. Maybe I should.
I think you'll change your opinion. Okay, all right. Well, okay. Thong or sarong?
Ooh.
Do you smokers when you're away?
I'm not adverse to it, but I'm more a sarong than a thong.
Okay.
I would say.
Full English or full moon party?
Full moon party.
Yeah, have you gone to those in India?
No, but I've been adherent to the full moon since about the age of 13.
Yeah.
So
you love it.
Yeah, it's part of my life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the last one, tip 'em or fuck 'em. Now this is, you know, tip you've had great service all day, all week at hotel.
Yes,
you
I tip.
Mean you tip 'em.
Oh, of course I do.
Yeah.
I tip.
Yeah.
Generously, always, everywhere.
That's very nice. That's good. Because we asked Tom Jones this, didn't we? And he said he tipped him and then fucked him. And I said, no, you're
also,
not.
I also have like a sort of fund in my glove compartment in my car when I'm driving down Euston Road to hand out to the various people who come up and ask for money.
Oh, I don't do that. I feel like a right arsehole now.
Well, no, I think...
You're a good person. I can see why Iceland wanted you as one of their own. Thank you, Damon. That's
my
been
pleasure.
So interesting.
Really nice to... I might pop round one night.
Oh, my God, yeah, please.
Although, yeah, I mean, maybe... Yeah, yes, I mean, I will.
I can't believe how close
you are. I live really close. Yeah, really close, yeah.
Thank you for flying Alan Air.
Oh, Damon, that was so great and so interesting. You've literally been everywhere. Thank you so much for everyone who listens. We really do appreciate, and we'll have another amazing guest next week. Ta-ta for now. Remember, life's a beach.